podcast archive of likepreciousfaith.us. I'm layman Randy Pritz, and this is a presentation from my ongoing Back to the Psalms series, where we go psalm by psalm into the deeper depths of these cherished psalms, challenging ourselves and our faith every step along the way to make the most of our Christian understanding and our Christian walk. These many resources are provided free of charge and free to distribute in the public domain. I only ask that if you're to distribute them, you present the content unedited and free of profit. My hope is that many of the Like Precious Christian community can be edified and strengthened by these humble offerings. Here is our psalm presentation for today. Today our commentary will be drawn from Psalm 36, Psalm 36. I'll be reading from the New King James Version. This is to the chief musician, a psalm of David, the servant of the Lord. And we'll begin in verse 1. An oracle within my heart concerning the transgression of the wicked. There is no fear of God before his eyes. For he flatters himself with his own eyes, when he finds out his own equity, and when he hates, the words of his mouth are wickedness and deceit. He has ceased to be wise and to do good. He devises wickedness on his bed. He sets himself in a way that is not good. He does not abhor evil. Your mercy, O Lord, is in the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the clouds. Your righteousness is like the great mountains. Your judgments are like the great deep. O Lord, you preserve man and beasts. How precious is your loving kindness, O God. Therefore, the children of men put their trust under the shadow of your wings. They are abundantly satisfied with the fullness of your house, and you give them drink from the rivers of your pleasure. For with you is the fountain of life. In your light we see light. O continue your loving kindness to those who know you, and your righteousness to the upright in heart. Let not the foot of pride come against me, and let not the hand of the wicked drive me away. There the workers of iniquity have fallen. They have been cast down, and they are not able to rise. So that's Psalms 36. We'll start out here in verse 1. It's kind of confusing in the New King James Version. An oracle within my heart concerning the transgression of the wicked. It's in other translations and by my own looking into the Hebrew here, it seems to be better put as transgression says to my heart, you know, what transgression is telling me, or what transgression should be telling me concerning the transgression of the wicked. It's their transgression that is telling my heart this. Now, transgression means revolt, and wicked means wrong. So it's revolt against God. And because of that revolt of God, it's making whatever the man does that's in revolt to God wicked, or it's making him wrong, right? You take, for instance, Jesus' story about the Good Samaritan, where a man is robbed and left for dead at the side of the road. Several people come by him, and it seems like the religious people cross to the other side of the road just to go around this guy and not have to deal with him. And then the story has a Samaritan who was looked down upon by the Jews. They're looked at that as half-breeds. It's a Samaritan that does the man a good favor by dressing his wounds and carrying him into town and putting him up at the inn and telling the innkeeper to, you know, keep track of what he owes him, and he'll come back and he'll pay him, you know, everything that is put to this man's charge. think of, you know, we like to think in terms of good works, okay? So now anyone, and the story kind of proved that, anyone, Samaritan, a half-breed, or a non-Christian, anyone can do good works, good relatively speaking here. What we're looking at here is, and good people can do wrong, or Christians can do wrong. Maybe that's another way we can say it. We take the same example there, and we have one man that's a believer, okay? And he, let's say he performs the good work here. He takes the man in, takes the man to the inn, pays his bills, everything till he's recovered. Good work, good deed, okay? And so does another man, a non-believer. Okay, so which of those two, you think, well, they both did a good work, right? Well, one of them, let's consider, did it in the fear of God. He did it in reverence to God and the love of God towards this man. Let's say the other, the non-believer, saw the religious people walk by and in revolt to God, in revolt to religion, or in revolt to Christian belief, or that kind of thing. He says, well, I'll show them. Okay, he takes that man, takes him in, he performs the same work. Two people performing the same work, but from two different reasons. Now that I think of this, it may not be the best explanation. What I'm telling you is because the one is doing it out of revolt to God, that same good work is now being accounted to him as wickedness. Does that make sense? Now, it's certainly wrong and it's sinful for those Christians or those Jews or whoever that walked by that were afraid of this man or afraid to get involved or too busy or that kind of thing. That certainly is wrong, okay? And there may be a fine line between just being wrong and being hypocritical and being unmerciful and that and being wicked. Because the wicked's doing his out of revolt to God. So what does this transgression tell us? What is it supposed to be telling us? What's the voice? What's the message in the transgression of the wicked? The message is that there's no fear of God before his eyes. How could there be fear of God before his eyes if he's in revolt to God? See what I'm saying? If he's doing this all by his own power and his own goodness and his own thing, just like the psalmist says here, what he's doing is flattering himself in his own eyes. So we've got a man that's not only in revolt to God, he's flattering himself by what he's doing in his own eyes. It's important for us to understand this, or at least grasp the concept here, because the concept that we like to grasp is whether a person does good works or not. Because on a human scale, we can judge between these things. Right? Yeah, that's a good work. Whether he believed in God or whether he didn't believe in God. Whether he was in fear of God or whether he was in revolt to God. It still equals a good work on our terms, right? But what we're doing now is looking at this in God's terms. As he looks upon it, okay, that guy did do something good to this man. I'll give him credit for that, but he's doing it in revolt to me. He's trying to prove to others that I can't take care of this man through my believers or through my people, or through my chosen, through my elect. You know, that I was wrong for choosing these people because they walked by. They went out of their way to stay as far as they could at an arm's distance from this person in need. Now that good work by the wicked or by the person in revolt is beneficial in helping to that man. That man's going to recover. That man's going to have his bills paid. He's going to be back on the road, you know, and finish his journey, go, you know, get back home to his family or whatever. And in such, that's a blessing, but it's a blessing from the wicked here. And so we've got the man revolting. We got the man not showing any fear or reverence towards God, and he's flattering himself in his own eyes. Now, continue with his description here. And this is confusing in at the second part of verse 2. It says, when he finds out his iniquity and when he hates. It's almost better, again, through other translations and through Hebrew word study here, to say that, well, you could be taken in this one or two ways. Either until, I mean, he flatters himself in his own eyes until he finds his inequity, finds out about his inequity, and determines himself that it's hateful. Or another way this could also be translated is he flatters himself in his own eyes until his inequity is found by others to be hateful. It's not exactly clear, you know, by my initial studies here, which direction this is leading towards. You'd have to know a lot more about the Hebrew than I do. But from the surface level here, it's saying either he finds his own as good of a deed as he just performed until he finds it out to be inequity. Or a perversity, that maybe that's the better translation, the perversity towards God, until he finds that out and determines and hates his action for that. Or others then look upon him and see, well, hey, you did that out of complete revolt to God. Good deed, brother. We thank you for, you know, helping this man out. We should have been the ones standing there. We should have been the ones carrying him into town. You know, we respect you for that, but look what you've done in doing this, in trying to show us your hatred towards God. And they find it hateful. I don't know if we're going to come to any conclusion on that today. Think of it what you will, but it could possibly go both ways. It could be purposely wanting to go both ways here. So we understand our end of this, and he understands his end of it, right? As God is looking down on them, we don't see it this way, but as God's down looking down on us, this is what it should be telling each of us. Now he says, verse 3, the words of his mouth are wickedness. Now, this wickedness is the same word in other psalms we've translated iniquity. Remember, we've already used the word iniquity, and it led us towards a perversity. So now, the word in the past we've used as iniquity, or panting, right, is being translated wickedness. So that panting, I've given you the example here where you're running a race, and you're out to win the race, right? And you're exerting yourself to the point where you've exerted yourself. You've given it all you can. You know, some of us would have to draw up and put our hands on our hips and just to catch our breath. It's that kind of effort. It's a determined effort, and it's an exertive effort, but it's towards a corrupt cause. It's towards a vanity. It's either running the wrong direction in the race, or it's not running the right race to begin with, or it's running the race to win illegally. That's what this panting, and it's translated here as wickedness because they've already used iniquity in another sense. It's panting and it's deceit or it's fraud. The words of his mouth are that. He has ceased to be wise and to be good. Now think of it with our example here. In a sense, he's set off to prove himself better than these Christians or better than these Jews. I think one of those was even a rabbi that walked by, purposely walked by the man. Okay, but the guy that actually does this has turned out, by saying this and by his words and by him flattering himself, right? He ceased to be wise. It was wise for him to help that man, but it's not wise for him to help that man in revolt to God. Sure, maybe you got a problem with Christians, or maybe you have a problem with Jews, right? But there shouldn't be a problem with God, Jehovah. It's understandable that men are fallen creatures, that they're sinful. They're going to do things, even in the name of God. They're going to do things that are just wrong. But it can't be said that they're doing this in revolt to God, right? Because they're trying to do God's service here. It's a tough concept. There's got to be some delineation. There has to be some discernment or separation between the two. The man that's doing wrong by trying to do right for Jehovah, doing it in reverence, delineated from the man who's doing right, but doing it in revolt to God and flattering himself in his own eyes. So this man has ceased, or he's left off being wise, and he's left off being good. As good as that deed was, right? And as good as it was for that specific person, injured person, it's not good in a broader sense than that. He devises wickedness on his bed, and he sets himself in a way that is not good. He does not abhor evil. All right, he's sensing evil. He sees that it's wrong for these Christians or these, believers, these followers of Jehovah to go out and around this man and not help him at all. Not to get themselves sullied or stained or dirtied with any of this, right? He's seeing men, religious men, doing wrong, but he himself's not abhorring evil. In fact, he's out almost to prove these men wrong and prove these men to be evil in their own right. It's a confusing situation looking at it from God's eyes here. To better understand this, we need a better picture of God. What God's about, right? What character, what things are important for us to know about God? And as God would be looking on this situation and determining who's the wicked here and who's the saint, we've got kind of an odd example here. There's plenty of other examples we could be talking about. Verse 5 here is going to give us a picture. It's hard to relate the incomprehensible infinite things to a finite mind. And so there, David's using a picture here. Notice he says, "Your mercy, O Lord, is in the heavens." Think of mercy as kindness. Your kindness, O Lord, is in the heavens. Now picture the heavens. A couple weeks ago, we were up in the mountains, away from the city lights and everything. We could see the Milky Way. We could see planets, we could see satellites, we could see all sorts of different things. And it's awe-inspiring. Think of that as God's kindness. That's a picture of God's kindness. Those heavens up there. All right? The second part of the picture here. Your faithfulness reaches to the clouds. And think of faithfulness as his firmness, his reliability. His dependability, okay? His faithfulness reaches to the clouds. So if you were to look upon it, here in Colorado, we may be, a mile, mile and a half, 2 miles above sea level. But, to see here in the summertime, these storm clouds roll across the plains here. There's cumulus clouds here that, started about 20,000 feet, and they go clear up to 60, 65, 70,000 feet. Just monstrous pillars of clouds. Think of that as his faithfulness, his firmness. It reaches to the clouds. That's how big, that's how massive. This is just a picture of it. It's actually bigger than that. But to put it on a scale that humans can relate to, think of heavens, think of reaching up to the clouds, think of reaching to the top of some of these 75,000 foot clouds. You know, a plane usually flies at 35,000 feet. These clouds are twice above that again. He says, now, your righteousness is like the great mountains. Righteousness would mean rightness, correctness, okay? His rightness is like the great mountains. And again, I use the example here in Colorado. We've got some great mountains here. We've got like 14,000 and above peaks here. That's going to change here shortly because they've recalibrated the sea level. They've lowered it a couple feet. So some of our mountains aren't going to, or they've raised it a couple feet. So some of our mountains are no longer going to be 14ers. I think one or two of them are about to be taken off the list here. But regardless here, that's a lot of 14,000 foot and higher mountains. People think of Pike's Peak. Pike Peak is right in the middle of that list, I think. Long's Peak's right in the middle of that list. There's plenty of mountains taller than both of those. It's just Long's Peak and Pike's Peak are the best known. But just think of how massive and how substantial and how jagged those mountains catch winter storms. Some of those 14,000 foot peaks generate their own weather system. You know, I could only imagine. I've never been to Nepal. I haven't seen Mount Everest. You know, I've seen some of the other mountains here in the northern America, but it's just awe-inspiring to see this. And he's talking about his rightness. Think how concrete a mountain is. Think how heavy. Think of the weight, the impact of a mountain. That's his rightness. That's his righteousness. And then he says that your judgments are like the great deep. And the great deep, of course, would mean the oceans. Not only the oceans, but those underground oceans, those aquifers, like the Ogallala aquifer. Massive amounts of water in there. Think of his judgments. And all the creatures that live in those judgments, and all the tides, and all the energy of an ocean. Sometimes that energy is stirred up this time of year down in the Atlantic there where these hurricanes and tropical storms swell up. That's the energy of that water. Energy of those clouds and everything, right? The energy of his judgments. Just the tip of the iceberg there. And it's making for typhoons and hurricanes and tropical storms and the such. O Lord, you preserve man and beast. Verse 7. How precious is your loving kindness. That is the word we just recently translated as mercy. Loving kindness. So it's the same word. It's the connection of the same idea. How precious is your loving kindness. How precious is your mercy. How valuable, O God. Therefore, the children of men put their trust under the shadow of your wings. It's because of this picture, because of this image we now have here, and partially explained in pictures, in poetic form here by David, this picture of God, because of that, and because of our new or our expanding image of him and his mercy. All right. Then there's something to trust in now. You're trusting in his mercy. You're trusting in his faithfulness. You're trusting in his righteousness. You're trusting in his judgments. You've got a good opinion. You've got a good image conception, discernment of how big and how massive these are. And yes, we're still only comprehending them on a human scale with, you know, natural wonders that that we all can stand and observe and admire and everything. But these are shadows. These are pictures, finite pictures of an infinite God. And because of this, now we can better trust and put our trust under the shadow of his wings. They are abundantly satisfied with the fullness of your house, verse 8. Abundantly satisfied would mean they are... The Hebrew word there, depending on the context, in one context it could be translated drunk. They are so abundantly satisfied. They're drunken, right? In another context, that would mean they're bathed. Think of yourself sitting in a large bathtub. That's how abundantly he says we're satisfied with the fullness or the richness or the fatness of the Lord's house. And you give them drink. Remember, we're talking about drunken. You give them drink from the river of your pleasures. Here's an interesting thing to consider here. Our Lord's pleasures. He created pleasure. He is the river. He is the fount of all pleasures, right? Now, oftentimes, you know, when we're in revolt, when we're in transgression to God, we're thinking of pleasures on our own fleshly terms. See, we've taken God's river of pleasures and we've corrupted each and every one of those to satisfy our own sinful or corrupt fleshly understanding of these things. We think of pleasure. Drunkenness, we think of lewdness, we think of, you get the idea, we think of nakedness, we think of sensual pleasures, which God created sensual pleasures, but we've perverted them, we've taken them off, out of his river, put it in our own bucket and called it our own, and dirtied it and sullied it with our own conception of our own image of things, right? But for us to be back in touch and back to the direct source and be partaking of his pleasures, give them drink from the river of his pleasures. Think about a God that is as big and as merciful and as faithful and righteous and his judgments and, you know, just as trustable as the God we've been reading about here, and the kind of pleasures that he designed us with, for, to experience, to appreciate, to glorify him in, right? And you begin to understand or sense, he even says here, for you, with you is the fountain of life. Verse 9, in your light we see light. It's almost, you could say, in your pleasure we see our pleasures. And he is the fountain of life. He's the fountain of all things pertaining to life and godliness, Peter says in his second epistle. God has given us all things pertaining to life and godliness. He's the fountain of life. In your light, we see light. Now in verse 10, oh, continue your loving kindness. Again, that's mercy to those who know you, and your righteousness. or again, that's rightness, your rightness to the upright in heart. That would be the heart that has been set straight, the straight heart. We come back to this idea of transgression and revolt. And we see if the man's properly aligned with God and he does this good work, like the work of the Samaritan here or any other good work, he's now doing it in fear. He's now doing it in reverence to God. And he's trusting in God. He's got a proper image of God. He's drinking of the pleasures of God. Jehovah is the fountain of his life, and in Jehovah's light, he's seeing that this man or this woman is seeing their light. They're seeing their purpose. They're seeing their steps. They're seeing their attraction. They're seeing themselves as they were designed to be. Right? Oh, continue your loving kindness. Well, this is the kind of loving kindness we're talking about, that we can partake of this thing, that we can, as again, quoting Peter, we can partake of his nature, his divine nature, having escaped the corruption that's in this world through lust. Oh, continue your loving kindness to those who know you, and your righteousness to those you're straightening their hearts out. Let not the foot of pride come against me. Let not the hand of the wicked drive me away. It's said in other scripture, who can separate us from the love of God? I mean, when God has his hooks in us, who can separate us from that? Therefore, the workers of iniquity have fallen. They're no longer part of this. They're not part of this loving kindness. They're not part of this righteousness. Their hearts aren't being made upright. They're not in this fountain of life. They're not. The Jehovah's light is not their light. Their light is their own light. They're revolting against this. All of this. This light. This loving kindness. These pleasures. This abundant satisfaction. Did I even say that right? I don't know. They're at revolt against his mercy and his faithfulness and his righteousness and his judgments. They may set out to do good works, and they may do, on a relative scale, good works. But because they're in revolt to God from the beginning, each and everything they're doing is still wrong, doing right in a wrong way. And this is where the workers of iniquity have fallen. They have been cast down by their own revolt, and they're not able to rise. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been a presentation of the Back to the Psalms series. May God be glorified by the saints in the name of Jesus Christ, his Son. Like PreciousFaith.us